Hi everyone, welcome. This is a joint session between the Women's Rights Research Seminar and the Middle East Politics Seminar, both hosted by the Middle East Center and OSGA, Oxford School of Global Near East Studies. My name is Mariam Alamzadeh. I'm associate professor at OSGA and a fellow here at the Middle East Center. And it is my great pleasure to introduce Dr. Tugba Bozkaja. Our honorable guest tonight, Dr. Bozkaja joined the European and International Studies Center, am I right, at King's College as a lecturer in politics, and she specializes in political methodology. She holds a PhD in political science from MIT, and before coming to King's, she was a postdoctoral research fellow at the Middle East Initiative at Harvard University. Might have heard the names of these places, I don't know. She is also a faculty fellow at the Association for Analytic Learning about Islam and Muslim Societies, ALEMS, and her research focuses on political economy of development with a substantive focus on local governance, bureaucracy, and state capacity. She also works on distributive politics, social welfare, and migration, an impressive area of topics. And her work has been awarded, for instance, by the Manker Olson Best Dissertation Prize in Political Economy from the American Political Science Association. And she has received paper prizes from Comparative Policy Paper Award from APSA as well, and the APSA MENA Politics section and the APSA Religion and Politics section. Is it all for the same paper or
no,
for several okay. papers? There. All right. And the talk today is called Women and Intra-Party Meritocracy in Closed List Systems. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Bozkaja.
Hello, everyone. First of all, many thanks for this kind introduction, and I'm really happy to be here. And I'm looking forward to your comments and questions about this research. Honestly, this is the first place we are presenting this project, and upon your feedback and comments, we may extend the paper, so it will be really helpful for us. And in addition to that, I just want to add that today I received some bad news about my family, which may impact my performance here, so don't be offended if I look like, you know, a bit low energy, and you know, it's not about you, it's about me. Okay, so the title of our project is Women and Intra-Party Meritocracy in Closed-List Systems, and this is a co-author project with a amazing PhD student from Stanford University, Rabia Kutlu. In this project, I mean, the motivation of this project was essentially originated the origin of this project was essentially the bias towards gender candidates among voters. But then we thought about other types of biases and how that gender bias actually doesn't really influence gender representation in the parliament much in closed list PR systems, because parties, political parties, have a much stronger control over politicians who will be selected rather than voters, compared to systems with a plurality rule, or compared to systems with open list candidates lists. And therefore, we wanted to redirect the attention from voters' biases towards party leaders' biases, and see if politicians reward women politicians to the same degree as men politicians. Okay, so this was the motivation of this project. And so far, research in looking at the politicians' behavior, parliamentarians' behavior, MPs' behavior, across different electoral systems, of course, highlighted the gender differences in representation styles as well as candidate selection criteria. And particularly in elections with a plurality rule or a closed list system, sorry, it should have said open list system, voter biases and expectations also influence political parties' nomination decisions. In other words, political leaders, party leaders, sometimes tend to think that because of existing voters' biases against women candidates, they tend to, for example, nominate women candidates in less competitive districts and men candidates in more competitive districts, which decreases the overall representation of female candidates in these electoral processes. In addition to that, of course, in addition to voters' own biases and expectations, there might be also a bias among party leaders towards women candidates, because that's actually the main decision-making authority about candidacy processes. And therefore, we wanted to shift the focus to this dimension, how female politicians are being rewarded with in terms of like their promotion in candidates' list placements, and whether there is any difference in this in the effect of candidates' performance on this placement position, and whether women are basically held to higher standards compared to men based upon their performance in the place, basically in the party's candidate selection processes. Okay, so as I said, so compared to, like, in contrast to open list systems or in contrast to plurality rule systems, in PR systems with closed list parties, parties have a, you know, good control over which candidates are being elected, because are going to be elected, because they can shape the lists, right? They determine the candidate placement list, and the candidates who are ranked first in that list are most likely be elected, whereas, and, you know, depending on your position, you may have like zero chance to be re-elected if you are at a lower ranking political candidate in this placement lists. And in closed list PR systems, of course, what matters in terms of re-election is just your position in the list, okay? So list position is critical. List position is the only thing that determines your chance of being re-elected or not, because there are no open lists. So party will basically put the women candidates at the top if they want women to be elected, and they can even like preserve the gender balance across different like electoral districts, and, you know, have a gender balance, equal gender balance in terms of gender equality, representation of women in party lists, if they really want that. So they have a higher, stronger control over who will be re-elected, thanks to the closed nature of the candidate lists in closed list systems. On the other hand, there is a question with regards to whether parties actually care about politicians' performance or politicians' competence. We know that, of course, particularly open list systems, parties tend to nominate the most popular candidates to maximize the number of votes because of the plurality rule. But in closed list systems, because the re-election chances are going to be initially determined by the order in this list, the party has the actual control over whether this list is going to be balanced or not. And again, another characteristic of these closed list systems is that usually voters do not know the specific ranks of like specific politicians in a given electoral district. They just vote for the party and they leave the decision to choose the candidates to the party itself, right? And a recent study focused on the European context finds that parties indeed tend to assign more competent candidates to higher ranks in candidates' lists, And this is particularly strong, this effect is particularly strong in electorally competitive districts, which makes sense because they probably want to nominate the most competent candidates in most competitive districts for them, or in most important electoral districts for them. On the other hand, while the current research looks at the effect of competence as measured by indicators like education, in this study, we wanted to focus on the actual performance of the politician, legislative performance specifically, during an election term, and how that affects its position in candidacy placement in the list in the next election. How basically do politicians who show higher performance during an election term, are they being nominated from higher ranks in the next election? Do they get promoted by party leaders, if we put it more intuitively? And because there is little evidence on the effect of parliamentary effort and on like this re-election or on candidacy in the next election, we focus on this aspect of the candidate characteristics instead of like pre-existing competence, which studies usually measure by education level of politicians or other skills. Okay, so as I said, yes, existing studies focus on whether parties choose more competent candidates for certain districts. There are also findings that show that actually in more electorally competitive districts or in more important electoral districts, there is a tendency to care more about competence for parties. So we know that they value the competence of candidates. And given that they actually, you know, nominate these more competent candidates in more competitive districts, means that politicians are unaware of the advantage that competent candidates bring, right? So they assume like having more competent candidates in these lists, in party lists, will increase their vote share in that electoral district. So that's the assumption they're making, and they're assigning the more competitive candidates to more important electoral districts. They care about competence. However, given the, you know, opaque decision making processes within parties, which changes a lot from context to context, as well as from even like at the subnational level, the procedures used to choose candidates may change. And therefore, this question has not received much attention so far. In addition to that, we also want to redirect the attention to gender bias in candidate list placements and whether effort plays any role in candidate list placements in the next elections. So basically, in this project, we are going to look at whether the current performance of a candidate increases its chance, increases the security of its position in the next elections list. Okay? And with respect to the research questions we are addressing here, there are two questions, but we will focus rather on the second. First, we look at how politicians' efforts during the election term affect their list placement in the following elections. So do we see a trend of party meritocracy? And in addition to that, how does the effect of legislative effort on candidates' list placement vary between women and men? For example, if they reward certain groups for their effort but not others, that means that there are double standards with regard to decisions in candidate list placements. So our questions include questions such as, do party leaders apply a double standard for women candidates just like voters do, you know, as we know from existing literature, because voters actually have a, I mean, women candidates have a disadvantage in terms of their competence because of the perception of voters about women candidates. Do we see the same double standard here as well in the party's own internal selection processes? And in addition, do they expect a higher performance from women candidates in order to promote them to a more secure list position in the next election? So these are the specific questions we are addressing in this research. And accordingly, we came up with three hypotheses, although I will focus on the second and third one today, because you will see that this are actually the, you know, the point that we are interested in. And in addition, of course, you will see that on average, we found that on average, the candidates' effort don't seem to have an effect on their positions in the next election, but it has some effect among women. In other words, men are not judged based on their performance when the upcoming elections lists are determined, but women are based on their performance, are chosen, selected based on their performance, and ranked based on their performance. So basically, this meritocratic criteria only apply to women, and we think that probably other non-meritocratic criteria apply to men, like patronage networks at the local level, or party leaders' personal relationships with some of the candidates, like loyalty. And therefore, we expect a gender difference, and we indeed find that, and I will soon present our findings in the upcoming slides. And the second hypothesis we will specifically test is whether female MPs face higher benchmarks for legislative effort to achieve secure list positions. In other words, do women need a show high effort in order to secure a good list position in the next election? And a third thing we are looking at is whether electoral competitiveness intensifies the meritocratic criteria for list placement decisions. And of course, given that we don't find an effort effect for men politicians, we think that this would only be valid and applied to women politicians. Okay. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the setting, which is Turkey, which is a multi-party system with a proportional representation rule. And as you can see, in general, the trend is women, of course, the number of women candidates as well as MPs is much lower compared to men candidates and MPs. And there is a tendency to probably nominate women from lower ranking positions, because when you look at the, you know, number of women candidates, the percentage wise, it is higher than number of women MPs. So it means that many women were actually put in like non-electable positions, and therefore we are seeing this discrepancy between women in placement lists versus women that actually won the election and became an MP. And with regard to the percentages, like descriptive information on women politicians in the parliament, we have the parties with the highest woman representation is Justice and Development Party, headed by Erdogan, and the main secular opposition party, CHP. And they have overall similar numbers of women representation. And this is the Kurdish party, where we see a much higher women representation, and that's also in their party program due to their like socialist agenda, let's say. It's a more socialist party propaganda that puts more emphasis on equality. And this is a nationalist party, and it is not surprising that we have a lower percentage of women here. Okay, so this is the four main parties in Turkey and the representation of women in these parties. In order to conduct an analysis, we will use a quantitative approach, and we will specifically use panel data from multiple election terms to see whether a given candidate's performance during an election term increases its position in the next election in party's candidate list. And for that, we collected data from basically the parliament's main website. We collected parliamentary speech data. In addition to that, we compiled the number of legislative proposals, verbal or written questions submitted by MPs, general debate requests, parliamentary inquiry signatures, as well as number of sessions a given MP spoke and the length of speech. These all come from the official website of the Turkish Parliament. It was scraped from them, from these websites. And in addition to that, we also use data on national election candidates and election results between 2022 and 2018, using the electronic database of the High Election Court. And finally, we also use some province level characteristics. Provinces are like the electoral districts in Turkey. So in each province, there are, like for example, in Istanbul, around probably like 100 MPs are elected just from Istanbul because of the population. So in each multi-member district, Turkey selects like a number of candidates. And in smaller provinces, of course, the number of seats is much lower. Okay, so as I mentioned, the empirical design draws on a panel design with two-way fixed effects, which means we compile this panel data set where we have all the candidates in a certain election term. Of course, some of them drop out from the list if they are not nominated again. So that's something we are still considering. And if you have any suggestions about that, it will be very welcome. But in general, our approach is to just compile these multiple election terms and calculate the performance of each politician for each election term based on the number of legislative proposals or other activities they did in the parliament. And then we use that as an independent variable indicator to show politicians, particularly the MPs' performance, legislative performance during the election term. And then the dependent variable is it is an indicator called seat security, and specifically that shows based on the previous studies on similar topics like candidate list placements, we measure seat rank security by the number of seats the candidate's party won in province in the prior election minus the candidate's list rank in the current election. In other words, the higher the number is, the more likely the candidate is to be elected. Because, for example, if there are 15 MPs elected from Istanbul, from CHP, and if you are ranked one, like this value will be 14, and you are very likely to be elected. Okay, so with regard to some descriptive findings, can I check the time? Like what?
You're like 20 minutes in.
Okay. So with regard to the descriptive findings, as you can see, this is just descriptive. So it just shows the distribution, the numbers of written questions, the average numbers of like written questions, general debate requests, legislative proposal, parliamentary inquiries, sessions spoken, and verbal questions across men and women. And in general, except maybe this one, the level of activity is very similar between women and men. Sorry, this is actually count. Okay, so this is count. There was another graph I wanted to show you, but I wanted to show this one because it's very impressive, because despite the lower number of women, I mean, the number of activities they are doing is almost equal to men's activities.
In what time frame?
This is from 2004 to 2018.
So just compiled.
Yes, all pooled in the same data. Okay, so I mean, with respect to descriptive statistics, there is a clear, clearly impressive performance by MPs who are women. And when we look at like the descriptive statistics about the candidacy list orders, we are seeing that, of course, here high ranking means a lower position, and one is the, you know, the most electable position. Here you're seeing that women on average are lower ranked in candidacy lists. And in the next election, we are seeing a similar trend, although it's not probably statistically significantly different. And finally, in terms of the seat security in the next election, in other words, if we deduct the guaranteed number of seats from the rank of the candidate, then in that case, we are not seeing much difference between the electability of women and men politicians. And this just shows the like pure survival rate in the next election, which means 22% of women politicians were re-elected, while in the case of men, it was much higher, 26, which means probably they were actually assigned to more secure list positions, probably. Okay, so I'm not gonna show the like overall results because it just masks the impact of performance that comes by women. So basically, if you look at the pooled data, and if you check if effort by like legislative effort by parliamentarians have an effect on their secure seat index in the next election, we do not see a strong enough finding. But then, when we interact with that variable, which is like the, you know, the variable that shows the effort, when we interact that variable with a gender, with a woman-man indicator, then we find that actually parliamentary activities by women increase their positions, I mean, the security of their positions in the next election. So meritocracy works for women candidates. On the other hand, male politicians' effort has like zero effect on their placement in the next election. And we are going to conduct additional analyses to analyze the mechanism through which men candidates are not judged by their performance, but we assume this is due to loyalty to like important party leaders, as well as their local patronage networks, which many women do not have. Okay, so if we look at the like specific results, you will see that except for the case of we have different effort indicators here. Sessions spoken, which shows the number of sessions in which a given politician spoke. Written questions, which shows the number of written questions submitted to the parliament. And there are also another indicator that just shows the questions that were asked verbally in the parliament. And then we have the number of legislative proposals. And finally, we have two more effort indicators, general debate request and parliamentary inquiry, which is also something along with legislative proposals. It's also one of the like most critical things that a politician can do in a parliament. So those two indicators may be, you know, may be conducted by like more high level party politicians rather than the newly elected, like recently elected politicians. But still, I think they all show legislative effort in a accurate way, in an accurate way. And we are seeing that. I mean, the results are very strong, except for the case of general debate requests and sessions spoken. So these, like the number of written questions or verbal questions or written legislative proposals or parliamentary inquiries, they have a strong effect in the candidate list placement of for women candidates. They have, as you can see, I mean, the numbers in the first six rows shows the effect for men, while these shows the effect for women. As you can see, for men, this has almost like, I mean, this doesn't have any significant effect, statistically significant effect. None of the parliamentary activities inform, impact their electability and their position in the next elections list. But for women, their performance in the parliament is very important and increases their position in the next elections candidate list. We also wanted to see, I will of course talk about like what that means normatively in the conclusion part, but before getting into that, I also want to talk about the role of electoral competition. First, I mean, we are focusing on the size of province. For example, provinces like Istanbul or Ankara or Izmir, these are like big metropolitan cities, and therefore there are so many politicians, and they're also more competitive because all parties get votes from these provinces. There is no like core districts in these provinces almost. And therefore we are focusing on big provinces as an example for more competitive and more demanded, of course, provinces, because of course someone, I mean, a Turkish MP would love to, I guess, prefer to be an MP of Istanbul rather than an MP of a smaller province. So it's also, of course, it provides more access to resources if you're an MP of a big metropolitan city. So in these big electoral districts, which have very large populations, we are seeing that the gap between men and women, as you can see by the bars highlighted in pink, the pink bars are showing the ones the results for the big provinces, big electoral districts. You are seeing that in general, the importance of meritocratic criteria, the effect of candidate's effort on its on her placement in the next election is much more important in these large scale provinces, electoral districts, which are also the most economically developed regions of the country. So basically this gap between women and men politicians and this reward gap is much more prevalent for the MPs of the biggest provinces. And in addition to that, we also checked whether the effect of effort on women's position in the list changes depending by the level of electoral competition in the electoral district. And for that, we divided our sample into two, where the first category is the, you know, the ones with high competition, shown as pink here, and the ones with blue bar, I mean shown in blue, have lower competition. And as you can see, except this puzzling case of legislative proposals, in general, the efforts of women are actually affecting their order in the candidate list, especially in most competitive districts. So that means that, like, that this translates to an implication which is that in most competitive districts, the decision about candidate placements are very different for women and men. So for women, they look at their parliamentary effort and they really reward it when it's, you know, when a woman politician shows a high parliamentary performance. But then in the case of a man, there is no effect of parliamentary performance. And that's why the gap between women's and men's performance is even higher in these most electorally competitive districts. Okay. So I think, you know, I will conclude with a discussion of the like main findings as well as the importance in terms of like the contribution to the literature, but also I will also talk about the next steps we are planning to conduct in order to learn more about why men or male politicians are not being promoted or maybe even like they can even lose their existing position based on their performance. Their performance doesn't have an impact, and why is that the case? For that, we are planning in the next step, we are planning to focus on the hometowns of politicians and whether for male politicians, their hometown networks play a bigger role compared to men. Because, you know, some MPs are born there and live there, but some MPs, especially the ones that are in Istanbul, yeah, they are born like in any like region of Turkey, migrated to Istanbul, so they don't have a local connection. But we are gonna see if men are actually rewarded based on their local connections, based on their hometown status, and the overlap between their hometown and the electoral district they represent. The second thing we want to look at is the history of a certain candidate within the party, because of course some of the party members started working for this party at a very young age, so it might be the case that men actually started to work for the party at a young age and became basically the loyal supporters of the party leadership, which is why some of them might be promoted based on other criteria such as loyalty rather than criteria such as performance. So these are the next steps we are gonna conduct, but of course after I conclude the findings, please let me know if you have additional suggestions regarding additional analyses. But in conclusion, we find that parliamentary effort, legislative effort on its own doesn't significantly influence an politician's prospects of obtaining politicians' likelihood of getting a higher ranked list position in the next election. Okay, but when we look at the heterogeneity between women and men, we find that women are subject to this, you know, high effort criteria, to meritocratic criteria. Meritocracy works for women candidates, and they are held to these standards. However, in the case of male politicians, effort doesn't seem to have an effect, which means meritocratic criteria don't really play a role in the selection or in the promotion, within party promotion, of male candidates. And it's like a double-edged sword, because I mean, you might think that it is a good thing that at least women are being promoted based on like meritocratic criteria, but on the other hand, that means that they are faced with a double standard, and in order to make the like party leadership happy, they have to show a much higher effort compared to their male counterparts. And in addition to that, I mean, the other side of this double-edged sword is that, of course, man, some meritocracy is better than no meritocracy, but that comes at the expense of gender inequality in representation and in promotion of politicians. Okay, and yes, as a reminder, particularly in electorally competitive districts, which actually produce the like upcoming leaders in the party in most cases, because MPs serving for Istanbul and Ankara always, are more likely to become a prime minister one day compared to those MPs in other places. So in general, the fact that in more competitive and more important electoral districts, this gender disparity is even stronger, shows us that the gender disparity might be even more substantial with regard to promotion criteria within the party in these critical electoral districts like Istanbul, which includes like 20% of Turkey's population. Okay, with regard to theoretical contributions, this study shows the relationship between the legislative effort and political career prospects of MPs in closed list proportional representation systems. And instead of studies that focus on like pre-existing competence using indicators such as education, we focus on the effect of effort. So we don't, instead of focusing on a static concept of competence, like education level, we are looking at the actual level of effort of candidates. And the second contribution we believe is basically this, you know, the double standard thing that we talked about. Women can be promoted to higher ranks in the list only if they show high performance, whereas for men, there is no such necessity. And that is the, you know, the more like gender related implication of this study. And in addition to that, of course, there is a difference. I mean, thinking about the importance of large metropolitan areas, important districts, like large districts, electoral districts with large populations in politics. For example, probably MPs that represent London are maybe more likely to become a prime minister one day. The fact that we have this parity more pronounced in actually more important electoral districts may lead to further gender disparities at higher levels of party positions, which we wanted to highlight. As I said, this is my first presentation for this project, and it's a draft, and we want to extend it in the coming weeks, and we really will benefit from your comments or questions. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll look forward to your comments.
Thank you so much, Sakwa. This is a lot to think about, and think about like the surrounding and the context more. So if I may kick off the questions, I was wondering if you can tell us about more about the nature of the list that each party presents for each election. Are we talking about, I assume that's not the case, but hypothetically, a fixed list with a certain number of individuals that only change rank?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we talking about like some being dropped out and some like added from a larger pool of potential candidates?
Mm.
And also, is there a gender quota on the list that they have to meet or they want to meet,
mm-hmm.
even informally? So,
mm-hmm.
because when you talk about how legislative performance affects or how basically legislative effort affects women's seat security more than that of men, I keep thinking about, okay, how else can it be? Is it the fact that there are fewer seats in general in that list dedicated
mm-hmm.
to women to begin with, so that there's a more competitive pool, so that they can replace
mm-hmm.
the few female candidates on the list more
mm-hmm.
easily.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the effect is heightened when we are in a competitive electoral district or when we are in like large cities
mm-hmm.
kind of like implies so.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important to know the nature
mm-hmm.
of the list and its
ranking
in
yeah.
the space.
Yeah, the list size, I can answer immediately. Are you going to go by one?
No.
Okay. So yes, the lists are separate for each electoral district, and of course, it depends on the population, because there is the there is a maximum number of MPs to be elected. Mm-hmm. So every party provides a list that includes the maximum number of MPs to be elected from that district, you know, in case everyone votes for the same party. And of course, the size of the list changes depending on the population of the electoral district. So yeah, I mean, what you said is actually an important consideration, because we may need to do additional checks to see whether what we, you know, difference we find between more, you know, bigger electoral districts versus others, it might also result, yeah, it might also result from this, you know, lower number of positions in like smaller electoral districts, which is something good to think about.
Lower number of positions, but also, so when you're talking like in the panel data,
yeah,
say Istanbul has like a maximum of 30 MPs,
yeah,
right, and they're like, I don't know, 10 women and 20 men are elected in 2004. Now mm-hmm. we're looking at 2018. It's not the same list, only rank order
yeah.
change, right? It's
yeah.
the list has
it's,
changed.
Of
the
course,
number of
the list content
changed.
Changed. Yes.
So
from
and,
scratch, yeah.
And I'm asking whether there's a, if there is a gender quota
mm-hmm.
on the list,
yeah.
and there is a no quota pool of applicants mm-hmm. outside that can be selected and put on that list.
Hmm.
Does that, it's like, for instance, yeah, it's like the labor market when there's like a high demand
hmm.
outside, yeah, there's more competition to get in, so performance matters more.
Hmm.
So if competition is higher amongst women themselves
hmm.
than amongst men.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yes, so you're saying, okay, the pre-existing the pool of aspirants may influence
yes.
If they don't have a lot of women aspirants, then they may have
yes.
to...
And if they have
yeah.
an idea of how many women we should ideally have on the list. And
yeah, yeah. I mean, with regard to statistics, of course, I need to check the statistics more accurately to make sure that's not the case. But in general, actually, I know that the number of candidates, I mean, the likelihood to be in the list is higher for... men, because I mean women are still applying, but they're not usually elected for the list unless they're, you know, unless they have really like a high valence level, like high competence level. For example, like currently we have mayor, I mean in Istanbul there is going to be a mayor candidate who is a woman, but who was also the head of like the you know, engineering organization in Turkey. So there are, of course, some competent women that are being nominated. But in addition to that, I think in general, women are having a hard time to find a position for themselves in party lists. But I think it's worth to double check. Maybe we can find some data on like the number of nominations, like number of volunteers, let's say, like aspirants.
Yeah.
That would be very helpful. Thank you.